listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And you're listening to State of the Arts.
On LA Talk Radio, as always, sponsored by Breakdown Services. We'd like to thank our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services, for supporting us this year. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit www.breakdownexpress.com.
Indeed, Paul. And our thanks also goes out to PerformingArtsLive.com for their support of our live arts calendar. Performing Arts Live is the most comprehensive online directory of event information for music, theater, and dance events in Southern California.
I am so excited today, I can't even tell you.
You and me both.
And I am not one of these people who gets excited about meeting certain people, but our guests today just are so iconic for film and musical theater that I'm just I'm verklempt. I'm verklempt.
They say.
Yes.
And now, for people that don't know what that means, tell them.
I don't know. I'm Italian.
Oh, okay.
So verklempt is sort of like, I think it's like sort of emotionally at the surface, just sort of like all just sort of holding everything back, but barely. I think that's what it is.
Right.
I'm wrong.
Something like that.
Perhaps we
could
have a Jewish person call in and give us the, I know it's Yiddish. So it's either Yiddish or German. But as Billy Crystal once said, Yiddish is just German with phlegm.
So, Paul, how was your week? How was Thanksgiving?
My week was good. Thanksgiving was good, yes. But like, as I said, I'm Italian, so, you know, Thanksgiving is amateur night.
Really?
Just, you know.
You know, because I cooked a little bit.
Did you?
I cooked a little bit, but we went out to dinner.
Yeah.
You know, and did the proper, you know, Thanksgiving dinner, but then I have to have the smell of the Thanksgiving, you know. So I actually came home from the dinner and cooked and made turkey chili, which was something that I'm known for, white bean turkey chili.
That's awesome.
And, you know, the real meaning of Thanksgiving, of course, being those white bread turkey sandwiches with the mayonnaise and the crust, you know, cut off.
Isn't that the real meaning of it?
Well,
I thought it was something about pilgrims. Maybe it's me. Something?
When I was a kid, it was about the white bread sandwiches you'd have the next day.
Oh, okay.
And did that for the family and put them, you know, in care bags, and everybody went home with those kinds of things. The one thing I didn't make was stuffing, which I'm actually pretty proud of the stuffing that I make.
And you didn't make it?
No, not this year.
I have a stuffing story, but I can't really tell it.
Really?
I mean, I could sort of allude to it because it would get me excommunicated from my family. So this stuffing story is not about my family.
Oh, okay.
I'll just say
there
this
you
right
go.
Now. One member of my family happens to make the best stuffing in the world. But one member of my family makes the best stuffing, just like, you know, the holiday equivalent of crack. And another family member makes the worst stuffing in the world. It's sort of like breadcrumbs with condensed milk. It's like turkey mousse. It's really disgusting.
So you really look forward to that.
So the whole thing about the family, you know, the family meal, the Thanksgiving meal, is jockeying your position at the table to be sitting near the good stuffing rather than the crappy stuffing, because you don't want to be sitting. And one day we're all in the you know, in the kitchen, and we hear from the dining room one family member, but then again, the story is not about me. We hear a family member say, you know, this table is so crowded. Maybe we could consolidate a few items. You never saw three guys running, don't mix the stuffings, because she was going to consolidate them, and that just would have ruined both. So we stuck with one, and we positioned ourselves near the good stuffing.
You did.
Rather than the marshmallow fluff stuffing.
And gentlemen, what about your own Thanksgiving?
Well, let's tell them who are here, by the way.
We haven't introduced them yet. They know.
No, we we have two guests today.
Yes, we do.
And as I
Let's
said, we're just completely over
you
the
see,
moon.
See, I got so nervous.
I just went right into it then. Michael, you know what, Michael? You're so much more well spoken. Do you want to introduce them, or do you want me to?
No, you go ahead.
We have two gentlemen with us today. I'm going to begin. We have, as I said, iconic members of the film. The one that we'll probably talk about today, because it's the one that they share, is the masterpiece West Side Story, the movie. And you can hear my little nervousness.
You are. You're not even reading the copy.
I am. No, I'm not reading the copy because I feel they deserve more. But I will. I will. I'll begin. But we have George Chakiris and Russ Tamblyn are with us today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much. Can I do the applause?
Please do.
There you go.
Yes.
Thousands.
And I love that guillotine cutoff that just lets everyone know that it's an audio file. But we have both of them here today. We're going to talk with George the first half of the hour, and then we're going to talk with Russ the second half of the hour. And we'll begin with George's introduction. We have with us today two great stars from the world of motion pictures. And as luck has it, they both co-starred in one of the greatest motion pictures of all time, the film adaptation of Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim's Broadway masterpiece, West Side Story. Our first guest was a 1961 Academy Award winner as Best Supporting Actor for his performance as Bernardo, leader of the Sharks in the classic motion picture West Side Story. Mr. George Chakiris is with us today. Welcome, George. Welcome, George.
Thank you. So
welcome, George. So glad to have you. Double applause.
All those people.
I'm heavy with the applause button.
In the
today.
Lobby. They're all in the lobby now.
And Michael, you go ahead with the next intro.
Well, you know, George and I met recently. We met at Debbie Reynolds' performance at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood. Have you ever been out there, Russ?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I went to... I was brought up at North Hollywood, North Hollywood High School, and the El Portal was...
The movie first, theater there, huh?
Yeah, it was the first place I kissed a girl. Was in.
Oh, wow.
I used
you're
to
kidding.
Go there all the time when I was like 10, 11 years old.
Because you're native, right? You're born in...
Yeah,
born
I was
here.
Born in Los Angeles and lived around in, Pasadena. And then we moved to North Hollywood. I lived in Inglewood and went to grammar school in Inglewood. And then went to high school and junior high school in North Hollywood.
Wow. And George, and are you from Los Angeles here?
I wasn't born here.
And you were born in Ohio, right?
Born in Ohio, yeah. But okay. We moved to California when I was 12. So
oh, okay.
I'm really from...
Yeah.
I'm Californian.
And your parents were from Greece, correct?
Well, actually, they're Greek people from Turkey.
Oh, okay.
And Greek people say, don't ever tell your Greek friends that your parents are from Turkey. Always say Asia Minor. So I learned that pretty quickly.
Greek Turkey playing.
Really? Yeah.
In fact, my grandfather left Turkey because of the political situation at the time. They were out to kill him, so they left.
Oh, good Lord. George, let's kind of backtrack through your career. I mean, you made your first film, really, in 1947, is that correct?
Yeah, I sang...
You made your debut in 1947, right, in Song of Love.
Song of Love. I sang in an Episcopal Church choir in Long Beach when I was a boy soprano.
Mm-hmm.
And they sang for movies quite often. Of course, the choir kept changing because you need a voice sopranos, but we were in this was a film called Song of Love, and a concert sequence in the big MGM stage, big company concert orchestra on one side and the choir in the back and so on, and the scene was very quickly Paul Henreid, who played Robert Schumann, and Katharine Hepburn, who played Clara Schumann. It's this big scene, concert sequence, where he starts to lose it and she comes from the wings to gently carry him off. So yeah, but it was so incredible to be in a movie studio. It was like, wow.
Well, I can imagine. I mean, back in those days, especially making movies was like unbelievable, so special, not like it is today, which is a very different process. I think it's just as hard and
sure.
As demanding of one's time and talent, but
sure.
It's different.
Yeah.
And it's different also, the cream rose to the top then, too. There were so much fewer films being made that it's sort of like television now. You look at television now, and there's 900 channels.
That's right.
Look back at the 50s when it was, Gleason and, at least in terms of the comedy, Gleason and Milton Berle and Ernie Kovacs, there were, half a dozen, but they were all stellar.
They were stellar.
That industry.
And both of these gentlemen here sitting with us today, Paul, starred in a motion picture that really changed the movie musical, as we know it in these times, and starring opposite you know, an amazing young actress by the name of Natalie Wood in oh, George. Wow. I know that you went on to star opposite Catherine Deneuve and Gene Kelly and Claudia Cardinale and Charlton Heston and Yvette Mimieux.
Yeah.
And wow, what an amazing experience that must have been for such a young man, because your fame came so instantly.
Well, it did really.
And Marilyn Monroe. I mean,
I was in the chorus dancing behind her, but hey, that's my favorite credit.
How many men? Can
I also say can't.
That?
I can't imagine the view was very bad from there.
Oh, the view was great. She was amazing. She was so incredible. She was, I mean, I have 8 stories about Marilyn Monroe, but I won't tell them all now. They're all good. They're all great. She was amazing.
If there's one person I would have liked to have had dinner with, I think it would be her. You know?
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, any celebrity that you know from the past. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
So dead or living, your celebrity for dinner, the dinner out is Marilyn Monroe. You know who mine is?
Who?
Charlie Chaplin.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, for sure.
Yeah. Charlie Chaplin.
See, I would like to have had after dinner with Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah. You'd like dessert.
Such a nice way of putting it. Yeah.
You know, Michael, it's funny that you said what you said about the beginning of the show. I realized looking at, we have this little sort of a cheat sheet that we go off of for the show here. And I did. I skipped over the entire intro for both gentlemen just because I'm so taken with the fact that we just have them in the studio that I just, and I've never done that before.
I know that. Pretty good. He's been talking about this for 2 weeks.
I have. I have.
Boy, I can hardly wait to hear what I have to say.
One of the things that I really like about the show, Michael does a tremendous amount of research pulling this stuff together and giving us the biographical information that we need. And one of the most interesting things I found as we talk to you, George, is the fact that you were in the London production of West Side Story, but you played Riff.
I played Riff, uh-huh.
And I'm just curious about how that, when did they consider you for Bernardo for the film? Was it based on the Riff portrayal? Did you come in and read for, how did that happen?
Well, I went to New York in 1958, and just because I thought I should go to New York. Small World Department, they were auditioning for the London company. And I met Ruth Mitchell, who was Hal Prince's, later was Hal Prince's associate producer. At that time, she was the stage manager. And I met Ruth at the stage door of the Winter Garden Theater. And she looked at me and she said, I thought you should read for Bernardo. So I read for Jerry Robbins during a lunch break. He was rehearsing Ballets USA. I read for Bernardo, and he said, would you take 20 minutes to look at the role of Riff? Came back and I read Riff, and he said, would you learn Cool? And I came back a week later and learned Cool. Anyway, I ended up playing Riff, and then for a year and a half. And then we started hearing rumors about the film, names like Elizabeth Taylor, Elvis Presley, so on. So none of us ever dreamed. I mean, it just didn't cross my mind. But one day, 5 of us in the London company got letters from United Artists asking us to do film tests. My test asked me to do one scene as Riff, which that's what I wanted to play because I loved doing it in the theater, you know. And it asked me to also do a scene as Bernardo. So we did those. Those tests were in black and white. 5 of us were driven to Elstree Studios outside of London. We had the most incredible day, obviously, and we drove back to the theater and we were all on cloud 9. It was incredible. The week started to go by. And nobody heard anything, so we thought, well, that's that. About 6 weeks later, there was a call for me at the stage door, the phone. It was Jerry on the phone. He said, we like your test, but we'd like to test you further. Could you get I'm trying to talk as fast as I can to tell this story quickly.
Oh, please.
Okay, no rush.
Anyway, he said, could you get a week's leave of absence? Well, nothing was going to stop me, of course, but they were nice. They let me go for a week. I came home, saw my family for the first time in a year and a half. It was great. My father drove me to meet Jerry and Bob Wise at the studio, and I did a test as Bernardo, that which Jerry directed, with a lovely girl called Barbara Luna, who I think was, I got the impression, I thought she was going to play the role, but she has a wonderful kind of assurance. Anyway, so I did the test, went back to London to go into the show again, because I was just gone for a week. And again, the week started to roll by, and finally I got a telegram telling me that I had the role in the film of Bernardo.
Now, did anyone else from the London production make it to the film?
Eddie Verso was one of the, you know, there's that picture of the three of us in the street, you know, with our legs up in second position, and Eddie is the guy to my left. So yeah, Eddie.
I might have that picture here actually, because I let me see if I do. And not that it helps us on the radio, but just my own. The three of you, that one there.
Yes. Yeah. Eddie Verso, the guy on in the purple shirt, was on.
This is the famous. This is the famous shot of the three of them on the. You know, it's probably the most. I would say probably the most well-known photo, one of the stills. Bernardo stills.
It is, actually. They use that quite a lot.
Famous one, actually, is the one with the three of them right after they, when they go up into that.
Oh, yes. The one that's on.
Straight out.
The one that's on. It's on your website, George. Isn't it the main?
That's why I use it.
That's the most.
Yeah. So it was used so often.
That's the one that's on the website is the, where you're looking up and the.
Our left leg is up in second, what we call second position in ballet.
Yeah. I was going to say. Michael, you knew what second position was?
I did.
Yeah, see, I did. You know, you might as well be speaking Greek or Turkish. To me, I mean, I just, second position. Yeah, that would be second position. Yeah, like, I have any idea.
But anyway, so I hope I made some sense as to how I got into the movie.
Oh. No, absolutely. And you know, at the same time, then you were finishing this. How much longer did you have to do with the show in London?
They gave me a 10-week leave of absence.
Oh, so you left the show for 10 weeks.
Well, I actually ended up leaving it for 7 months. That's how long I worked on the film. And they had already begun rehearsal on the film before I got there. And there was more filming that took place after I left. So I think film... rehearsal and filming on the film was almost a year. So when I finished 7 months of work on the film, I then went back again to the theater to play Riff to finish my contract with them. And I people ask me, what was it like to play Bernardo? It was great to play both parts. And you know, when you become that familiar with a piece, and you know, when you do it in a theater for that long. I almost could have played Anita, you know. you become really familiar with all the parts.
Yeah.
And I do want to say that Ken Leroy, the original Bernardo, and Cheetah Rivera, the original Anita, were in the London company, and they went nuts over Cheetah, especially. She was the toast of London. But Ken Leroy was such a wonderful Bernardo. And so I was opposite him. I watched him, you know. So, but anyway, you... I became really familiar with all the parts, but I loved playing both of them. I sort of had the best of both worlds. And in the theater version, Riff, because he sings cool, it has a little bit more meat on the bone, so to speak. So it's a bit more of a part.
Right.
And in the film version, because the guys are added into the America number, and there's a little bit more with Maria and so on, it was a better role in the film than it was in the stage version. So it was great to do both of them.
Because they changed the order, if I remember correctly, the order, like Krupke, Officer Krupke, in the film is sort of early on, and then in the play it's sort of a comic relief after a very, very heavy scene. Am I right? Is my memory correct?
That's right. Yeah. And okay. Russ, of course, knows this one because he did Officer Krupke. You know, they do it in the film. But it's Ernest Lehman who adapted adapted it for the screen. I don't know who made all the changes to reconstruct it, so to speak, but.
It sure worked well.
I think the film version of the switch. It does, and cool comes.
It made cool like a much far more intense.
As well.
Yeah. Did you, George, have any idea that this would change your life to the extent of which it did?
No, not at all. I just, you know, as a dancer, you just, that was my background. It's just, you think, I wonder what my next job is going to be, kind of thing. And but I don't think anybody from the producers across the board. I remember hearing a couple of the guys in suits, I'll say, talking in the one of the alleyways, and I remember them saying, "Well, I think we have an artistic success. We might have an artistic success, but we're not at all sure that we have a commercial success." And I think that was basically everybody's feeling. I think we all felt that we were working on something really of quality and a good, wonderful piece. I think that was a general could have sort of, there was such a buzz, I think, even around town.
There was about, a buzz, but we really had no idea that it was going to be as big as it was.
Yeah. Well, because it followed a stream of motion picture musicals, which were, if I'm not mistaken, Oklahoma, South Pacific, were preceding West Side Story. So that's why I think West Side Story was so huge. It's because it was so groundbreaking as a film, and it also wasn't that big Technicolor kind of, you know what I mean, big splashy, beautiful Rodgers and Hammerstein. It wasn't that, you know, which were they were wonderful films, but they were something different. This was a whole different animal. And this morning, I told Paul earlier today, I watched the opening of the film this morning, the prologue, which is so brilliant and so stunning on how it was executed, and your dancing, and you know the whole take on opening a film like that. It was so smart and so clever, and it still stands up today. Mm-hmm. I mean, the film.
There's a scene you should watch it again just to see. There's one place where anybody runs up to me after I sing the jet song.
Yes.
And get down off the bars, and then I walk around a corner, and anybody runs up to me and says, "Hey, Riff, can I get in the gang? Whatever it is." Well, that shot was ruined for some reason. It got ruined when we shot it in New York, and it was one of the first scenes that we shot. And so they shot it again, like it was like a year later, coming around the corner. So if you run it again, and you can see the cut, but everyone is a year older.
Really? I got a
little known fact.
But it isn't exposed right here.
I think the reason to echo what you were saying, the reason that the film is so timeless, and the reason it's so it's just so amazing. Two reasons to my mind. One is that you mentioned Oklahoma. West Side Story, I really think, is the first. It made the musical cool. It made the musical hip. It made anyone could go see West Side Story, and just, you know, it had such the broad appeal. But the other thing too is that it's stylized and it's not. And I think that's the masterpiece of that film. The dancing that would have been just as perfectly comfortable on a Broadway stage, placed on in that tenement background, where both styles competed with one another, and then you look at other portions with when you're in the home with Maria, and the solid colors, framing them and things like that. It was very, very stylized, but it was very, very realistic at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think that was very groundbreaking. I mean, I'm not a film scholar or anything like that. I just remember, you know, that really stands out as really being a defining element of that film. One of the things I definitely want to talk about, that because we did mention George's website, and I want to include how to get to George's website, because I'm interested, George, in talking to you briefly about the jewelry line, because I think that's fascinating. But it's georgechakiris.com. That's GEORGECHAKIRIS.com. And be sure to visit that website. Incredibly well-designed website. Michael,
beautiful.
We were discussing it earlier. But
before you go on, I just wanted to backtrack just a moment. Indulge me, Paul, if you will.
Oh, not at all.
Back to the beautiful women that you've worked with.
Yeah.
We mentioned Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
You know, another woman you worked with who is dear to my heart is Rosemary Clooney.
Oh, Rosemary, my God.
In White Christmas. Rosemary was my mentor for all of my life, who taught me everything about music, everything that I know today. I have a nightclub here, a supper club here called Sterling's upstairs at Patello's in Studio City, where we cater to we produce the best of Broadway performers in concert and nightclub artists dedicated to the Great American Songbook, if you will. And there's no other place like it, really, in Los Angeles. When you get there, you kind of feel like you're back in the Broadway district of New York.
Paul has
actually headlined the club in the past with his one-man show, Renaissance Geek, and later become straight up with a twist. He's a brilliant actor and a brilliant comedian as well. And
keep going. Just read from the script, Michael.
I'm not reading from any script right here now. But Rosemary, and I just wanted to get kind of your reaction to having worked with her. I know, again, you were a dancer in the film, but she's one of the best women in the world, wasn't she?
Absolutely. And, you know, on top of it all, she's just such a lovely, lovely beautiful person, very down to earth, very real. And I probably didn't get to know Rosie as well as you did, but I did get to know her over the years, and I just loved her dearly. When she was given the that award that they give the Society of Singers, I could not stay away from that evening, and there was no way I could not take out a full page ad, because I loved her that much. She was great. She was wonderfully friendly, and what an incredible vocalist talent she was.
Oh, as well. Really? Today, and I mean, you know, that music. The reason I started this nightclub is because I used to, at one point in our relationship, I road managed her. For
that was
2 years.
She gave your first job in the music business, right?
She, in that sense, yes. Yeah, really, in a serious sense, yes. Huh. And we did a major tour of this country for quite a long time, and I was so excited to go into these clubs, these nightclubs, when there really were nightclubs mm-hmm. in the country to play mm-hmm. and have this experience with her.
Yeah.
And I said to her constantly, I want to do this when I get older. I want to produce this kind of music that you're singing this. And of course, you know, during her time, many of the hits that she had, as well as Sinatra or anybody else that was a contemporary, were coming from Broadway shows, right? Mm-hmm. They were mm-hmm. crossing into the mainstream.
Right.
So she said, don't ever forget that you said that, because if you do, there's a chance that this type of music might just go away if it's not people that think like you do, and we want to keep it alive for our children. And that's exactly what I did in 2006 when I opened the club and I dedicated it to her memory. And we celebrate that every year, in June of every year. And God bless her. I always feel this great energy, you know, of Rosemary Clooney. But when I saw a little bit of that clip today, too, of uh-huh. you in White Christmas. So I was very emotional this morning before I got here.
Well, by the way, before we leave today, I'd love to know where your club is, because this sounds is absolutely my cup
of
tea.
Oh, my gosh. We'll have you in as a guest. Yeah, absolutely. It's in Studio City. I'll tell you all about it later.
Thanks.
But I'm leading to working with Natalie Wood, also someone I would have liked to have sat down and had dessert with. But what was that like for both of you? I mean, really?
Well, I had very few scenes, and they were short with Natalie, but so my recollection is really less about working with her than just her presence and being around her and getting to know her a little bit socially as well, being at her home and so on. I just thought, I love Natalie. I just love Natalie, and I feel I'm always so very protective toward her. I still feel I want to protect her in whatever way I can. And I also think, you know, Natalie had a very unique, special quality that set her apart. There are so many wonderful actors and actresses on the screen, but there are some who, on top of their talent, have a special personal quality, which is how I feel, that makes them, I don't know, just there's something more happens when they're on the screen. Audrey right. Hepburn is another one that yeah. I feel that way about.
They just have that, that energy.
Me too.
Yeah.
But Natalie was absolutely just so beautiful. She was so beautiful, and I liked her tremendously, just tremendously. I thought she was absolutely the best, and I did get to know her as well.
I didn't think about that, George, until you mentioned it, but you don't really have, and I was thinking about Russ, too, you don't really have, you have very few scenes with her in the
yes.
film,
because yeah.
it just occurred to me that she doesn't do America. She's not up there for that.
That's right.
But Russ, you only have the one scene with her.
I didn't have one, I don't think.
Right, because Riff is stabbed before
that's
she
right.
shows up at the end.
Yeah, I didn't work with her at all, but I knew her very, very well. I knew her for years before that film. We used to hang out.
Okay. So you had knew her before that.
Yeah, I was good friends with several people that she was friends with, and I knew her back when she was doing Rebel.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
No, that's just that.
You know, we have to kind of. There's so many things that we want to talk to you about and could talk to you about. It's a shame that we don't have about 2 or 3 hours here. Yes. To do that, but we do have to break in and do a live arts calendar that we do every week, if you don't mind, gentlemen, and then we'll be right back to you. And I'll start that off, right, Paul?
Oh, go right ahead, Michael.
Sure. The Color Purple, a soul-stirring musical based on the classic Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Alice Walker and the Oscar-nominated film by Steven Spielberg, is the unforgettable and inspiring story of a woman named Celie who finds her unique voice in the world. Nominated for 11 Tony Awards, The Color Purple is a landmark theatrical event, a celebration of love and a Broadway phenomenon. With a joyous Grammy-nominated score featuring jazz, gospel, and blues, The Color Purple will once again be capturing the hearts of young and old and uniting audiences in a community of joy at the beautiful San Diego Civic Theater in San Diego, California, for four performances only, December 3rd through December 5th.
More than 50 years ago, one musical changed theater forever. That musical was West Side Story, perhaps the greatest musical of all time. It has continued to mesmerize Broadway audiences since its revival in early 2009 and will be closing January 2nd, 2011. But as luck would have it, the show's national tour dances into the Pantages Theater in Hollywood beginning tomorrow, November 30th, with a run that also lasts through January 2nd. From the first note to the final breath, West Side Story soars as the greatest love story of all time. Tony Award-winning librettist Arthur Lawrence Broadway direction will be recreated for the tour by David Saint, the associate director of Broadway. The original Jerome Robbins choreography is reproduced by Tony Award nominee Joel McNeely. West Side Story remains as powerful, poignant, and timely as ever. The new Broadway cast album of West Side Story recently won the 2010 Grammy Award for Best Musical Show Album. If that's not a testament right there, that it just won the Grammy for Best, this musical, is just, that says it all, doesn't it?
Indeed. And for more information about these shows, ladies and gentlemen, please visit us at stateoftheartsla.com and also performingartslive.com.
And we're going to talk with Russ shortly. I want to mention what we just touched on earlier. Do check out George's website, georgeshakiris.com. You had a hobby, George, and it became a full-time appreciation for design and construction for this new creative outlet, this jewelry line that you have, which is just staggering, staggering quality. It really is an amazing little collection.
And it's very timely to go onto his website and check it out, ladies and gentlemen, because of the holidays. It may be something that you find appealing there that you want to buy a loved one. I certainly saw a lot of things I would buy.
That's really beautiful.
Indeed.
So we're going to
Mr. Tamblyn.
Let's talk to Russ.
I have to say, man, you see, I feel honored, so I'm calling him Mr. Tamblyn. So you are not only this amazing dancer that, I mean, harkening back to what we were discussing with George, when this happened for George, at that time you were already quite in the swing of making motion pictures and really one of MGM's most popular young stars at that time.
I was under contract there. Right?
Yes, and you had already been nominated for an Academy Award for Peyton Place, and in the same category as George, Best Supporting Actor, an amazing film that later became a big hit television series.
He won his, though.
He won his.
Yeah, don't rub it in.
He won his, but you got your nomination first, though. It was four years before West Side, right?
Yes, it was.
It was 1957.
Yeah.
You were in 1961, I think, right? Yeah. So, I mean, you went on to win other awards, too. They're very significant awards. And your dancing was so, I remember this dancing. And, I mean, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and all of those wonderful films that you did. I mean, you were really very acrobatic, weren't you, as a dancer?
I was an acrobatic dancer.
Yeah.
And I started off as an acrobat, not really a dancer. Fell into it by accident. When Seven Brides for Seven Brothers came up at MGM, I'd already been under contract for a couple of years and done maybe three or four movies. And when Seven Brides for Seven Brothers came up, Michael Kidd, the choreographer, wanted six great dancers. The seventh brother being Howard Keel, who didn't dance at all. So the studio said, look, Michael, we have actors under contract here, so I'll tell you what, you can have four great dancers and two of our actors. And so myself and the oldest brother, Jeff Richards, who played Adam in it, right. The oldest brother, he not only couldn't dance, he hated dancers. He couldn't even social dance. He just hated it. He was an athlete and says didn't even want to have anything to do with the dancers. And then eventually came over to the set and we got involved. And Michael Kidd said, hey, I hear you do tumbling. And I said, yeah. And so I did a backflip for him. He said, great, we'll put it in the number. So I said, I don't want to dance with Jacques Dambois from the New York City Ballet. I mean, it's ridiculous. And
But he said it's square dancing, so I ended up dancing it.
Now, if you're going into that, that they utilize your talent in that and modified the choreography to include that, did that happen in West Side too? Because, you know, things like you perching up on the top of the swing set when you do that perch that you do up there. I mean, how much of that happened during the process in like knowing your acrobatic abilities? Was it just you doing, you know, defined choreography, or how much was that modified on the fly?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because Let me start by telling you that that I didn't test for Riff. I actually tested for Tony to be opposite, and I tested with girls, so I thought I was going to really get it, even because I was so close to it. I had the same agent as Robert Wise, so I had like an in. So his name was Phil Gershon.
Yes, of
so
course.
So I used to ask Phil all the time where you know how it was going. He said, "Well, they're narrowing it down. They're narrowing it down. You're still in there." And he finally said, it's between you and one other actor. And I did these tests. MGM let me go over and test with some girls. And I heard you tested with Barbara Luna. I tested with her too, George. And also I tested with Mickey Callen, who played Riff on Broadway.
That's right. Okay.
And I tested with, and Mickey played Riff, and I played Tony in the test, you know. And Mickey said, look, I haven't done any movies. And I said, well, look, this is the thing. And I gave him some advice, you know. I'll never, you know, and I wonder how he ever took that, you know, and then I ended up doing the part. So I ended up, I did tests. I never dreamed of doing Riff. And then all of a sudden I got a call and from Phil, and he said, well, guess what? Richard Boehmer got the part of Tony, but they've offered you the part of Riff. And I said, what? He said, yeah. And he said, but, he said, here's the bad news. The studio, MGM has turned it down. And so they've said, I was under contract there, and they said, no, they did not want me to do Riff. So I had to go in and see Benny Thaw, who was then running the studio. And Benny Thaw said, oh, sorry, Russ, I've already got you booked in another film that we think will be a lot better for you. And he said, you're booked in it. And he said, it's going to be much, much better for you, much better kind of movie starring Connie Francis called Where the Boys Are. And so I begged him. I literally, you know, said, please, man. He said, this, I love this show, and I've been for years, I saw it on Broadway, and I've been thinking of nothing else but this film. And he said, well, let me think about it. And so I got a call and saying, well, that they, I got out of that movie and went in to see Jerry to do West Side Story. Now, to get back to your point of the dancing, the first thing that Jerry said to me when I went into his office, he said, you know, congratulations, you're going to be Riff, but I want to tell you right now, he said, I know that you're an acrobatic dancer, but he said, Riff does not do acrobatics. He does not do tumbling, and there'll be no tumbling. You're going to have to do straight dancing in the movie. So I said, all right, I'll give it a shot. And it wasn't until Jerry was let go, and we did the dance hall number, that I did tumbling. And Tony Mordente took over the choreography. He said, let's put some tumbling in. So I put tumbling in, and I always thought, oh, my God, Jerry must have really been upset by that, you know, that I did it. But the movie turned out great, and many years later, at the Pantages, they had a show called Jerome Robbins Broadway.
Yes.
And they had a bunch of sections.
Sure.
So I went to that opening night, and the guy who was playing Riff in the number did a backflip. And I said, oh, my God, and Jerry choreographed it. I said, how did that happen? So I went backstage afterwards and met him. And I asked him, I said, how did you get away with doing a flip? Didn't Jerry choreograph this? He said, yes. He said, that was part of the audition, that you had to be able to tumble for Jerry. So
wow,
could pat myself on the back.
You should.
You know, the one thing that I added.
When Carol Lawrence was sitting in that very chair with us, she told us that Jerry was a very tough guy to work for. Is that
tough? Is
putting
is
it
the
mildly.
Nicest
huh?
word.
Really, that's what Carol said too.
I've heard him called everything but just tough.
Yeah, yeah. She was polite about it, but she did insinuate that he was difficult.
Yeah, he was.
he was pretty much of a monster. He was great to me and to Natalie, and I probably was to you, too.
My recollection of him is different, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, for the show, from stories that come from the kids, there's horrendous stories of him. And his book, too. It's called, his book is called Living with Demons or Dancing with Demons or something like that.
Yeah.
And it talks about all the demons that were influencing him and how his life, you know, was filled with. So it's not just my opinion. And I've done shows with... I did something. Jacques D'Amboise is a good friend, and Jacques D'Amboise did ballet, worked with him in ballet, and he finally just walked out one day and said, "I'm not working with you anymore. That's it," and walked out. And we all admit that he was a genius, but he was very, very difficult.
Well, as you know, as a lot of geniuses are. I mean, we talked earlier about, you know, we're talking about who we would have our dinner with. You know, Chaplin. You know, the people that have worked with him. A brief conversation with when I was much younger with Martha Ray, who had worked with him in a lot. We worked with Chaplin. She was just like, he was a monster. He was, you know, but you know, it's genius. It's sort of like that fine edge of genius.
Wow. And Russ, you've been working on an autobiography entitled Dancing on the Edge. Is that right?
Yes.
Correct. And it's this work contains rich vignettes of your memoirs and reflections of your.
Yes, I'm only telling. Good stories that I can remember.
And how, I mean, it really kind of takes you, the reader will go through 60 years of you being in this business, right?
Yeah.
And I noticed a really great thing on your website for advanced copies of your book, that people can go to your website, which is your name, RussTamblyn.com, and sign up for an advanced autographed copy, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
I really don't know.
Yeah, they're on your website.
Oh, well, I don't watch it.
It's commerce. It's commerce.
There you go.
It's art.
No, you're going to be flooded with people that are going to watch this book.
But I'll tell you, it's going really, really slow. I've been working on it for maybe like 3 or 4 years already.
Yeah.
And I'm just up to the part where I went into the Army. It's you know, they say, evidently I'm not going to die soon, because they say your life goes by in a flash.
Right.
My life is going by like a guy crossing America in a rowboat.
Well, writing is... difficult, what can you say?
Oh, yeah.
And you're doing it by yourself. You don't have someone
assisting you.
I'm
doing it all by myself. I'm writing it all by myself.
Wow. Well, good luck with that. I'll be watching out for that. I already signed up. So how long do you think it's going to be maybe from now?
I'm hoping to finish it up next year. And it's in different sections. I started off billing as Russell. And I was born Russell with one L. And then my first film... where I got billing with Samson and Delilah, where it was billed with two L's. And then I went on to use the name Rusty. And then from Rusty, when I got signed under contract at MGM, Dori Sherry asked me if I'd change it to Russ. So that's how the book is sort of going. You know, from Rusty to, from Russell to Rusty to,
to Russ.
Russ.
To Russ.
And then back to Russell. I'm using Russell now, by the way, and I do fine art. And
All right. So we have to call you Mr. Russell Tablet.
Well, everybody calls me
whatever comes to mind.
Debbie Reynolds still calls me Rusty. People I knew at MGM.
Right.
Oh, Rusty.
Still call me Rusty.
What does Neil Young call you?
He calls me Russell.
I was just astounded to see that link. I mean, once again, we were talking about, you know, learning the history and the biographical information, but your whole history with Neil Young is just fascinating to me. It's just how you guys go back. That was it a concert piece or a poetry piece what was it that he had done that you and he had worked on together?
It was a tour Well, we did a film called Human Highway,
right,
that we did with Dean Stockwell and Dennis Hopper and the group Devo, and which is a fabulous movie. If you got to see it sometime, it's so bad, it's good. And Neil plays a part in it. That was
Devo, the punk band. Are We Not Men, Devo?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Devo, we're in it, and a bunch of people, a crazy cast. But then he did a... we were going to do a movie in Topanga that Dean wrote a script called After the Gold Rush.
And Neil wrote the music for it. Neil lived next door to me in Topanga, so
yes.
we were good friends. And Neil wrote the music for it, and his album sold millions of, it sold millions, and the movie never got made. Universal was afraid to touch it. So Neil moved away, he moved up north, and he called me and said, I want to make a movie, and I want you to be my best friend. And Dean Stockwell played his manager, and we did this movie called, was it Human Highway?
Oh, was the film?
Was the film.
Oh, okay. Is that a Netflix available thing? I mean, is that viewable? Can we find that if we went on Netflix?
I think you can.
Oh, because I have to see it now. No.
but then after the movie, then he called me up from Europe one time and decided to do... he had written this thing called Greendale, and it was a show, sort of like a rock opera.
Right, the Greendale concert. Yeah,
it was the Greendale concert.
Yeah.
And right. So he asked me to direct it and choreograph it, and I was in it. So we went all over the country, like three times, all over the United States, and then we did a Far East, Eastern Rim in Japan and Australia. And
wow.
Just astounding.
Exciting. Exciting.
People came together.
We're coming to that point in the show where we have to initiate our guests.
Oh, that's right. That's right. This is sort of a running thing that we do here on the show, is we ask people to share their most embarrassing or just the biggest theatrical disaster that either happened to them on stage or when they were filming, or if there's any anecdotes you have about the nightmare on stage stories or most embarrassing moment, or if anything comes to mind along those lines, either one of you.
Well, I can think of two things, but after West Side Story, I did a movie with Yul Brynner and Richard Widmark called Flight from Mashiach, and I didn't want to do this movie. I just felt wrong to me. Anyway, I ended up having to do it. Richard Widmark was so wonderful, and he and Yul Brynner were so like opposites, but Richard was very serious, wonderfully serious, and in the movie we spent a lot of time in the mock-up of a helicopter. And like a good actor, like anybody in the theater as well, there's a lot of stuff to work with inside the helicopter to know how to fly it, supposedly. Anyway, I was so this was a mock-up of a helicopter on the soundstage, this was in Japan, and I was still a little nervous, and I had my script on the floor by me, so every time they yelled cut, I looked back at my script, and I said, I think I probably would have said, must have caused them to say cut more than I should have. And he said, in the loudest voice I can ever remember hearing, "Why don't you read the script?" I didn't know where to look. I didn't know where to move. I was so embarrassed, and I thought, this is a Japanese crew. Do they understand what he said? And I just walked away, and I said to the director, I can't work with him. Just a close-up of him, do a close-up of me. I can't. Anyway, I got over it. And and by the way, he was so terrific. I mean, he later said to me, "I'm so sorry I did that." But I said, "No, that's okay. I had to learn that lesson." But I was so embarrassed by that. Why don't you read this?
Read the script.
Wow.
Well, I had read the script, but
Russ.
Well, one of my most embarrassing moments was at MGM when I was under contract there. There was, right next to the casting office near the front gate, there was an old wooden building that had lots of rooms in it with pianos, and that they used for auditions, for songwriting, and whatever. But they used it for, just so you could go in there. And I used to go in and play Boogie Woogie, and it was pretty, pretty bad, I guess. I didn't know how, I couldn't read music, but I could play Boogie Woogie really great. And I'm in there playing one day, the door is shut, and I'm in there and I'm banging on the piano, and all of a sudden the door opens, and this guy is standing there looking, and I said, "Oh, excuse me, I just come in here and play." He said, "No," he said, "I just was listening out in the hallway. It's interesting what you're doing. What are you doing?" So I showed him, and I said, he says, "Do you read music?" And I said, "No, I just
I just picked it up by ear, and I bang, and I just play. You know, I start like here. I said, do you know what this key is? He said, yeah, that's a C. You're playing in C. I said, do you play the piano? And he said, well, a little bit. And I said, oh, I said, well, play something. You know, you play something too. And he said, oh, no. And I said, that's all right. Don't be embarrassed. I don't know what I'm doing either, you know, that much. But give it a try. And so I finally talked him into sitting down, and he was sitting there. I said, go ahead, just, you know, play anything. It doesn't really matter. As long as you play with feeling, you know, that's what really, I think that's what really counts. You got to know that I'm like 18 years old, you know. So he says, all right, let me think now. Okay, so all of a sudden, it turns out it was Andre Previn.
Oh, my.
He played probably one of the most hardest classical things he could think of. I mean, his fingers just went up and down the piano, you know, like crazy, like, you know, all over the place. And he finally finished, and then he looked up at me and he says, hi, he says, I'm head of the music department, Andre Previn. Held his hand up, and I shook it, but I could have crawled under the door at that point.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Wow, that's Paul, hysterical. What a show, huh?
Oh, that was wonderful. That was wonderful. We have for next week, I want to let people know have two reviews for next week. We're gonna review Next to Normal.
Yes, right.
Currently playing at the Amundsen, and also Harps and Angels, Randy Newman's Harps and Angels.
Correct.
Which is currently playing at the Mark Taper. Gentlemen, we're just so grateful to have you on, and we hope you had as good a time as we did.
We had a great time. George and I are pals now. We're double dating to the opening of West Side Story. What you mentioned is tomorrow night, Theo?
It actually officially opens Wednesday. It starts as previews tomorrow night.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's
right. So it's in performance to the public tomorrow night, but we'll be there. We'll see you there.
Right. Okay, at the opening.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, thank you both for coming. And Michael, do we have anyone to announce for next week?
Well, we do. Actually, two of the stars of West Side Story, the Pantages, will be joining us next week. So,
good.
Yeah.
All right.
We have something to look. We're keeping the theme going, gentlemen, and you're on.
It's a West Side Story month here at State of the Arts. Gentlemen, thank you so much. A pleasure. And we will see you next week.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.